Chapter 41.
Wake up, Tavarich! Joe Zavala floated in a netherworld just below consciousness, but he was awake enough to know that the cold liquid being poured on his lips tasted like antifreeze. He spit the liquid out. The roar of laughter that followed his instinctive reaction jerked him into full consciousness. Hovering over Zavala was a bearded face with a 14-carat grin. Zavala saw a bottle again being tilted toward his lips. His hands shot out, and he clamped his fingers in a vice-like grip around the man's thick wrist. A startled expression came to the blue eyes at Zavala's lightning-quick move, but the gold-toothed grin quickly returned.
"You don't like our vodka," the man said. "I forget. Americans drink whiskey."
Zavala unclenched his fingers. The bearded man pulled the bottle away and took a swig from it. He wiped his lips with the back of his hand.
"Not poison," the man said. "What can I get you?"
"Nothing," Zavala said, "but you can give me a hand sitting up." The man put the bottle aside and helped Zavala sit on the edge of the bunk. Zavala looked around at the cramped quarters.
"Where am I?" he asked. "Where are you?" the man said.
He turned and, in a language Zavala recognized as Russian, translated the question for the benefit of three other similarly bearded men who were crammed into the tight space. There was laughter and the vigorous nodding of shaggy heads.
"What's so funny?" Zavala asked.
"I told them what you said, and what my answer will be, that you are in hell."
Zavala managed a slight smile, reaching out his hand.
"In that case," he said, "I'll take that vodka you offered me."
The man handed the bottle over, and Zavala took a tentative sip. He felt the fiery liquor trickle down his throat, but it did little to alleviate the throbbing in his head. He put his hand to his head and felt a bandage wrapped around it like a turban. He still had the bruises on his scalp from his B3 adventure.
"Your head was bleeding," the man said. "It was the best we could do."
"Thanks for the first aid."
"Who are you guys?" Zavala asked.
"I am Captain Medev, and these are my officers. You are on a nuclear-powered Akula missile submarine. We are what you Americans know as the Project 941 Typhoon, the biggest class submarine in the world. I am the commander."
"Nice to meet you," Zavala said, shaking the captain's hand. "My name is Joe Zavala. I'm with the American National Underwater and Marine Agency. You've probably heard of it."
Medev reached into a pocket of his windbreaker and produced Zavala's laminated Numa ID with his picture on it.
"Anyone who goes to sea is familiar with the great work of Numa," Medev said. "Your beautiful ships are known around the world."
Zavala took the ID and tucked it into his shirt pocket, grabbed the blanket from the bunk and wrapped it around him to soak up moisture from his clothes. He took another sip from the bottle and handed it back. One of the officers went over to a sink and got him a glass of water. Zavala washed away the vodka taste with it and touched his head bandage again.
"No offense, Captain, but you should pay more attention to your driving. Your submarine surfaced right under me in my helicopter."
Medev did another translation that his officers found hilarious, but when he turned back to Zavala, he had a somber expression on his face.
"My apologies," the captain said. "I was ordered to take the vessel to the surface and bring you aboard. Even for someone with my experience, it is difficult maneuvering a 600-foot-long vessel with any degree of precision. You were floating in the water. We brought you on board. I am sorry, too, for the loss of your helicopter."
"Who told you to take me prisoner?"
A frown came to Medev's genial face.
"The same criminals who hijacked my submarine and have held me and my crew prisoners," he said.
Medev launched with angry gusto into his fantastic story. He was a Navy veteran of the Typhoon service who had gone into civilian work. The Reuben Central Design Bureau, which designed the submarine, had come up with the idea to use decommissioned Typhoons to carry freight under the Arctic Ocean. The missile silos were replaced with cargo holds that had a capacity of 15,000 tons. A corporate buyer purchased the sub, and it was Medev's job to deliver the vessel to its new owner. The crew of 70 or so was half the normal complement, but without the need for weapons specialists, it was large enough to do the job. They were promised big paychecks. The captain's instructions were to surface for an at-sea rendezvous. But a Chinese freighter carrying armed men met them and took over the ship. They were told to sail the ship to the Pacific Ocean. Using a torpedo tube, the kidnappers launched a missile, targeting a surface ship. Then the Typhoon was involved in an operation to move the underwater lab off the ocean floor. "Where is the lab now?" Zavala asked. Medev pointed downward with his index finger.
"About 300 feet beneath our hull, at the bottom of a submerged caldera," he said. "There was an eruption many years ago, and the volcano collapsed, leaving the caldera in place of the island that was once here. Coral grew on the rim, establishing the reef you came across."
"How did your vessel break through the reef?" Zavala asked.
"We didn't. We passed under it. The Japanese blasted a tunnel through the caldera, planning to use this place as a submarine base in World War II. They were going to wait until the American fleet bypassed the atoll and come up behind them with German super subs to sink their ships. A clever plan. But the Allies bombed the German submarine factories, and then the war ended."
Then Medev asked, "What do you know of this lab? It must be important."
"Very important," Zavala said. "The U.S. Navy has planes and ships out searching. I flew over the lagoon. The water is as clear as crystal. Why didn't I see you?"
"We're below a camouflage net stretched across the lagoon. It's what you Americans call low-tech."
"What about the island I landed on in the lagoon?"
"That is high-tech. An artificial platform on floats, kept in place through a propulsion system geared to a self-correcting navigational system. It provides an observation post to detect intruders. You were seen long before you landed."
"Someone went to a lot of trouble to create a hideaway."
"My understanding is the people behind this scheme intended to use the atoll for trans-Pacific smuggling."
A pounding on the door interrupted their conversation. Then the door flew open, and an Asian man holding a machine pistol stepped into the cabin. Right behind him was Phelps. Phelps gave Zavala a lopsided grin.
"Hello, soldier," he said. "You're a long way from home."
"I could say the same thing about you, Phelps."
"Yes, you could. I see you've made friends with the captain and his crew."
"Captain Medev has been very generous with his liquor cabinet."
"Too bad the party's over," Phelps said. "The captain and his boys have work to do."
Medev took the hint and ordered his crew out of the cabin. Phelps told his guard to escort them back to their posts, and then he pulled up a chair and put his boots up on a small writing table.
"How did you find this little hidey hole?" Phelps asked.
Zavala yawned.
"Dumb luck," he said.
"I don't think so. Next question. Anyone else know about this place?"
"Only the U.S. Navy. You and your pals can expect a visit from an aircraft carrier any minute."
"Nice try," Phelps said with a snort. "The atoll would be swarming with ships and planes by now if the Navy knew about us. The camera on the island sent a picture of your pretty face directly to my boss, Chang. He's the one who ordered Medev to grab you, even at the risk of being seen by someone. You've got yourself in a hell of a mess, Joe."
Zavala's lips turned up in a slight smile.
"It only looks that way," he said.
Phelps shook his head in disbelief.
What do they give you Numa guys to drink? He asked. Bull's blood.
Something like that, Zavala said.
Now, I've got a question for you. Why did you give us the key to the handcuffs and return Kurt's gun after our skirmish with your boss lady?
Phelps slid his feet off the desk, put them back on the floor, and leaned closer.
Actually, I've got three bosses, he said. Triplets. Chang is in charge of the rough stuff. He's got a brother named Wen Lo who takes care of business. But the hologram you met back in Virginia is the top dog. Don't know whether it's a he or she.
What do you mean?
Sometimes it's a man image, sometimes it's a woman. You never know.
What's with the holograms?
They don't trust anyone, not even one another. They're crazy, too, but you already know that.
It didn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that they're not playing with a full deck, Phelps.
How'd you get hooked up with this bunch of maniacs?
I'm an ex-SEAL. Crazy or not, they pay better than the Navy. I was going to retire after this gig. Lowering his voice, he added, like I said, I've got family back home. You really think the virus the Triad came up with will hit the U.S.?
It's only a matter of a very short time.
Damn it, Joe. We've got to stop this thing.
We? Zavala scoffed. I'm in no position to do much about anything right now.
I'm going to change that. I've been thinking how to work this out, but I'm going to need your help.
Phelps's cell phone buzzed. He answered the call, listened for a moment, said okay, then hung up. He told Zavala to stay put and slipped out of the cabin. Zavala pondered his conversation with Phelps. The man was a hired gun and killer, not the type he normally would choose as an ally, but their goals coincided. They would have to smooth out the wrinkles in their relationship later. Zavala got off the bunk and walked around the cabin. He went over to the sink and splashed water on his face, then walked some more. He was almost feeling normal when Phelps returned. Phelps was wearing a black neoprene wetsuit and carrying a big duffel bag. There was worry in his hound dog eyes.
We're going to have to postpone our talk, he said. That was Chang calling.
What's going on? Zavala asked.
Things just got more complicated, Phelps said. Feel like going for a swim?
I just had one, Zavala said. Do I have a choice?
Nope, Phelps said. He handed the duffel bag to Zavala, who hefted it.
Is this part of the complications? Zavala asked.
Phelps nodded. He told Zavala to suit up and left him alone in the cabin. Zavala opened the duffel and found a wetsuit. He stripped out of his damp clothes and pulled on the neoprene top and bottom, then opened the door and stepped out. Phelps was waiting in the passageway with two men, also suited up for a dive. He motioned for Zavala to follow and led the way through the labyrinthine innards of the giant submarine. They encountered a number of crewmen who gave Phelps sullen looks. At one point, the guards split off, and Phelps stepped into a compartment at midship.
Escape chamber, Phelps said, pointing to a hatch over their heads. There's one on the other side of the conning tower that our two guard dogs will be using.
He opened a bulkhead locker and pulled out two complete sets of scuba gear that included full face masks with wireless communications capability. When they were ready, Phelps climbed up a ladder into a cylindrical chamber. Zavala followed him up, moving slowly under the weight of the gear. The escape chamber was a tight fit for two men in full scuba gear. Phelps hit a switch that closed the floor and water poured in. Once the chamber was flooded, he opened the hatch over their heads.
Phelps let air into his buoyancy compensator and swam up the escape shaft.
Zavala followed close behind. They emerged from the submarine at the base of the lofty conning tower. The two guards were waiting for them. Each guard held a gas-powered spear gun with a nasty-looking barb on the business end. Zavala ignored them and slipped his feet into his fins.
The greenish light that filtered through the camouflage net bathed the black hull of the submarine in a spectral glow. Zavala had once seen a typhoon at dock when the hull was mostly submerged and had been impressed by its size. But that was nothing compared with seeing the gigantic sub and its massive conning tower in full. A duck-like voice quacked in his headset, and Phelps waved to get his attention.
"That's enough sightseeing for now, Joe. Follow me. This is a technical dive. 300 feet plus, but you've got Trimex in your tank, so you'll be okay."
Phelps switched on a waterproof dive light. With a fluttering kick of his legs, he swam away from the deck, propelling himself through the water using expert form, and then angled downward. Zavala came next, with the two guards following his bubble trail. They headed toward an amber cluster of sparkling lights. As they descended further, Zavala saw that the lights were on the outside of four large globes attached to each other with tube-like connectors. He immediately recognized the lab from the diagrams he had studied.
"Davy Jones's locker," Zavala said.
"Quite the sight, isn't it?" Phelps said.
Zavala noticed something else. Ghostly blue forms were moving slowly in the shadows just beyond the reach of the lab's searchlights.
"Are those blue Medusae I see?" he asked.
"Yeah," Phelps said. "You want to stay away from those puppies. They're hot-wired. We can do a nature tour later. We've only got a few minutes to talk. We're the only ones wearing communications gear, so don't worry about those guys on your tail. I was gonna keep you on the sub so we could work out a plan, but Chang said he wanted you in the lab. Didn't say what he's got planned, but one thing's for sure. He won't be throwing you a welcome party."
"I didn't expect one," Zavala said. "How about you throwing me a lifeline?"
"I'll do my best. I'll let you know when I make a move. Meantime, be a good boy and don't give those guys with the spear guns an excuse to use you for target practice."
They were directly above the hemispherical-shaped structure at the hub of the lab complex. Zavala remembered it as the transit module where the airlock for the shuttle vehicle was located. Phelps swam under the transit module, past four mini-submersibles attached to the underside like feeding puppies, then up into a shaft that opened into a round pool at the center of a circular chamber. Phelps removed his mask and communications unit, and Zavala followed his lead. The guards surfaced seconds later. By then, Phelps and Zavala had used a ladder on the side of the pool to climb out. The guards emerged from the pool, and all four men hung their air tanks and gear on wall hooks. The guards took their masks off to reveal hard Asian faces. They put the spear guns aside and produced machine pistols from their waterproof backpacks. Phelps pressed a switch and a door slid open. He led the way along a tube-shaped corridor to another door that opened into a small room. Phelps told the guards to wait in the passageway, and then he and Zavala stepped inside. Half of one wall was made of glass, allowing a view of a laboratory containing several workers dressed in white biohazard suits. The workers looked up when Phelps rapped his knuckles on the glass. All went back to work except one, who waved in acknowledgement and disappeared behind a door labeled Decontamination. Minutes later, Lois Mitchell stepped into the room. She was wearing a lab coat and slacks, and her raven hair was still damp from the decontamination shower. Despite his predicament, Zavala signaled his appreciation of Lois's striking good looks with a slight smile. Lois saw it, and the corners of her lips turned up.
"I know you," she said.
Zavala did a fast mental check of the hundreds of women he had dated through the years and drew a blank.
"Have we met?" he asked cautiously.
Lois laughed.
"I saw you on TV," she said.
"You were the engineer from Numa who made the dive with Dr. Kane in the bathysphere." She furrowed her brow.
"What on earth are you doing here?"
"I could ask you the same thing," Zavala said.
Phelps said, "Dr. Mitchell, this is Joe Zavala from Numa."
"Lois,"
the scientist amended, extending her hand.
"Hate to break up this party," Phelps said,
But things are moving fast, Dr. Mitchell. My boss is on his way to the lab. My guess is that he wants to check on your project.
Actually, she said, he's coming to get the vaccine.
Phelps narrowed his eyes.
What do you mean? He asked.
While you were away, I told one of those people you have following me around that we've synthesized the toxin.
She turned and gestured at the glass partition. This is our fermentation, cell culture, and analysis lab. Your boss will be able to take the vaccine culture with him and go into full-bore production immediately.
Scowling, Phelps said, that's not good.
Why? Lois asked. Wasn't that the purpose of this whole project? To produce a vaccine that can be given to the world?
You tell her, Phelps said with a shake of his head.
Once they have the vaccine, Zavala said, they'll let the epidemic run until they bring down their government. Then they'll offer the cure to the rest of the world. Pay or die. You and your lab have become expendable.
The color drained out of Lois Mitchell's already pale features.
What have I done? She wailed.
It's what you're going to do that counts, Phelps said. There was a hard knock on the door. Phelps opened it, and one of the guards leaned in close and whispered in his ear. Phelps stepped back inside.
You haven't said what you want me to do, Lois implored.
Whatever we do, it better be fast, Phelps said. Chang's chopper has left Pompeii for his ship.
Zavala's head was still reeling from its encounter with the 600-foot-long typhoon, and he was suspicious of Phelps's abrupt change from foe to friend. But the announcement that the Triad's enforcer would soon arrive at the lab had been more effective than having a bucket of cold water thrown in his face. Since he didn't have many options, Zavala decided to put his money on his former adversary. He grabbed Phelps by the arm and said,
"We need to talk, soldier."